If you enjoy the FitCast and you can help support us going forward, please go to thefitcast.com and click on one of the donation tabs on the website. Via PayPal, you can do a one-time donation or set up a recurring donation to help support the show. The show does take a considerable amount of time to produce, and obviously there's also costs with running the website and getting the episodes to you via iTunes or onto your favorite device for listening to them. If you can, if you're in the position to do so, go to thefitcast.com, click on one of those donation tabs, and please make a donation. Thank you. Hello and welcome back to the FitCast. This is episode number 296. I am Kevin Larrabee and I'm very happy to have on the show for the first time, Sue Falzone. Sue, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you doing, Kevin?
I'm doing good. We just kind of like were at Chicago for the Perform Better seminar and I got to see her talk out there, and every time I get to see her talks, like, they're always, you know, super enthusiastic. So for presenters out there, if you're getting into presenting, first try to be, you know, excited about what you're going to be talking about. It does help in the audience, but you know, two super interesting stuff. So I'm really happy that we're going to get to talk about that a little bit more today.
Good, me too.
Okay, so for people that don't know Sue, I'm just going to have to do the brief bio thing real quick, because you're at Athletes Performance for 13 years. And you're vice president of the performance, physical therapy and team sport. And also, this is kind of a big deal. You were the very first female head athletic trainer in any of the four major sports. And for people who are outside the U.S., that's baseball, football, American football, NHL, hockey, and for basketball. So, I mean, let's start with that for just a second. I mean, that must have been a really big deal when you got approached for that position. Was that like a no-brainer to jump on that?
No, I took a lot of time to think about it. You know, I don't want this to come out wrong, but like working in Major League Baseball was never my dream goal. It was never my be all end all. And I know that is a lot of people's goals, and that's great. You know, it just sort of, the Dodgers were working with Athletes Performance, and it was sort of my, my thing to work with and my organization to work with and to organize. And when that opportunity came up, you know, I had to think about it long and hard. I mean, it's a huge commitment. You know, you're talking not only 162 games, but you're talking spring training, you're talking playoffs, you're talking off season, which is not truly an off season. It's just a season with no game. So, you know, it's a huge life commitment on top of everything else going on. So it definitely wasn't a no-brainer. I took some time to think about it, and I'm glad I did it. It was a fantastic experience.
Yeah, just from talking to Mike Boyle, my boss, for people who don't remember on the show, the schedule just sounds super grueling. Like, it's just like nonstop, right?
It is. It is nonstop. I mean, people, I think, sort of take for granted that, you know, Los Angeles is playing the Mets on Sunday, and then they're playing, you know, in New York, and then on Monday they're playing San Francisco in LA, you know, the following day. So we have to get, obviously, from New York to LA and play another game within 24 hours. So it definitely is tough on everybody, let alone the players. You know, it's a lot of overnight travel, a lot of sleeping on an airplane, a lot of, you know, 3 or 4 hours of sleep, and definitely a grueling schedule.
So again, just for a little bit more bio stuff, you're also a board certified clinical specialist in sports physical therapy and a certified athletic trainer, a certified orthopedic manual therapist for the spine, and a certified strength and conditioning specialist through the NSCA. So this is what we're going to be talking about this a little bit, because you've done so much, like in terms of what's out there for education and for certification and for, you know, the clinical side of things. You've just done so much. And one of the things that we're going to talk to you about is how to apply all that stuff, you know, with people out there. But, you know, one of the things that I love to talk to guests about when I have them on for the first time is to just have you talk a little bit about your career up until this point. And what got you interested in, you know, being a physical therapist and physical therapy? Just because, again, to not go back too far before in the interview, but you're always super enthusiastic about the stuff when you talk about it. Like when you came out to NBSC, like talking about the T-spine, you know, for like an hour and a half and being super enthusiastic about it, or talking about the diaphragm and just like being like, yeah, like we know about this stuff, but look at all this cool stuff that we're learning about it today. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. You know, I had always wanted to work in sports medicine in some way, shape or form. I'd always wanted to work for the Buffalo Bills. I always told my mom that. I thought I wanted to be an orthopedic surgeon. And at the time, physical therapy was an undergraduate degree. So it was simply a bachelor's degree. So instead of going into biology, you know, sort of pre-med, which is basically a biology degree, I went to PT school instead, thinking that at least if I didn't get into med school, I would have, you know, PT to fall back on as opposed to biology sitting in a lab somewhere. So that's why I did PT. And I enjoyed rehab, and I had been to physical therapy before, so I knew what I was getting into and I had enjoyed it. But initially, it was definitely a means to go on to med school. And then, you know, when I got into PT school and started really kind of getting into stuff, I realized that doctors don't get to do what I like to do at all. So I just stuck with the PT thing and, you know, got done and was licensed at age 22. So that's a pretty young age to kind of get going. I turned 22 in April, graduated in May, and started working in June, and was licensed in August. So it was definitely a whirlwind time. And then sort of worked in general outpatient orthopedic clinic, and just did not like it. It was I loved the clinic I worked at and the people that I was with there, but the patients were a lot of workman's comp, a lot of chronic pain, and that just sort of wasn't my thing. So I had learned about a program in athletic training at UNC, which at the time I was living in Raleigh. So I had applied to that, and so actually ended up getting my athletic training second to my physical therapy, which is totally opposite. I don't think you can do that now if you tried, just because of the logistics. So actually it was physical therapy first, athletic training second, and then got done with that, picked up, moved out west for no good reason other than it was sunny, and accidentally met Mark, and he had just opened his facility. And so things kind of flowed from then. And, you know, it's kind of one of those things, like, I never knew what I wanted to do. I just knew what I didn't want to do. And sometimes knowing what you don't want to do is just as good. And so, you know, Mark was just kind of starting the business, and I was in a position where I could take a chance, and started working for him. And gosh, I think I was the 7th employee overall at AP. And, you know, we obviously grew the business and grew it to what it is today, which is all over the map. You know, and Mark's being surrounded with Mark and the people that had worked for Mark originally, Brandon Marcello, who's now at Stanford, Daryl Etto, Luke Richeson, Roger Scharnhorst, like all those guys, we just talked and we just got fired up about stuff. We talked about training, we talked about rehab, we talked about nutrition. You know, we weren't that busy when we first opened, so we had time to all hang out together, and they watched my treatments and I watched their training. And so we really just kind of built this amazing, like, fire and passion that definitely fueled I think me moving forward.
You've left the Dodgers and you did some traveling, which I know we're a little off topic, but I've been to Japan like 5 times in the last 2 years. So I'd love to hear, and I've talked about it on the show a couple times, but I'd love to hear, what was your experience out there in Japan? I know you did five or six countries that you went to in a couple months?
Yeah, I went to 4 countries in just a few months. Nice. Yeah, Portugal, Mexico, Japan, and South Korea. So it was a lot of continents in just a couple of months. I don't recommend that. That's a lot of time zones. but yeah, my time in Japan was amazing. I took my mom with me, so we kind of did the touristy thing and did Tokyo and Kyoto and Osaka. And then in Osaka, I spoke at a conference with one of the local hospitals there that Ichiro Tani, who is the massage therapist with the LA Dodgers, set me up with. So they hosted me for 2 days of speaking and just got to talk on upper extremity injuries, shoulder injuries, training, those sorts of things. And it was just a really, really cool experience. Anytime you get to teach somewhere in a different culture, it's just so neat to see the similarities and the differences in philosophies and treatment, and just to kind of see the passion in people. So it definitely helped. It was one of the things that helped renew my energy in the field, that's for sure.
Very cool. So let's talk about that talk that you had in Chicago this past week. It seems like forever ago, but we were just there. And one of the things that you hit on, or I guess it was one of the main talking points, was, you know, what do we do when we are in the field of fitness, or, you know, whether you're a strength and conditioning coach, you're a physical therapist, or just a trainer, what do you do with all these tools and all this information that we have access to today? Because there's so many certifications out there, and now, you know, there's people that are, you know, getting certified in specific equipment like a TRX and stuff like that. So I was wondering if you could talk just a little bit about that and your thoughts on, you know, how do we organize all this stuff to make sure that we're not just being like, all right, you know, I went to, you know, Strong First certification, so that looks like the best way to train everyone. I'm just going to use kettlebells for the rest of my life. Like, what do you do?
Right. Yeah, that's a great question. And that's why, you know, when you talk about enthusiasm, when you're talking, if you're talking about a subject that you're passionate about, it's super easy to be enthusiastic. And, that is where I have been living. Basically, November and December, I kind of cleared my head. And then starting in January, have really sort of been thinking about all of these things, right? Like, all of a sudden, I'm not associated with Athletes Performance Exos anymore. I'm not associated with the LA Dodgers anymore. And so now I'm just by myself, right? And so what do I believe? Not what does Athletes Performance believe? Not what does the LA Dodgers believe? What does Sue Falzone believe in? And I not that I was coming up empty, but my mind was like all over the map and I just couldn't put it all down. And I needed to just sit down and organize it. And I needed to figure out where things fit in for me best, and how to utilize them, and kind of figure out what is my personal philosophy. How do I think that people should be treated? From a therapy rehab standpoint. So it really all stemmed from just like a personal search of what in the world do I believe in now that I'm just by myself. So that's really where it all came from.
And another thing that I wanted to ask you about is, you know, for people out there, you know, we do have a lot of fitness professionals that are listening to this. What do you say when people come up to you and say, all right, you know, I'm getting into the industry, or maybe I've been in the industry for a while. I might have like a CPT or a CSCS. What's the next step to make sure that, you know, my athletes and or my clients aren't, you know, getting the short end of the stick? I want to make sure I'm, you know, doing the best I can to make sure that they're getting their money's worth when it comes to their training session, or if it's, you know, some kind of massage or physical therapy aspect of things.
Yeah, I think it's important for every discipline to have some good basis of manual therapy, right? Whether you are a strength coach or a personal trainer and you take some type of course on manual stretching or flexibility or those sorts of things, or if you're a clinician, an athletic trainer, a physical therapist, you are, you're well versed in differential diagnosis and joint mobilization and manipulation and how to kind of put your hands on people. I think that there is a huge power in touch, right? And that sort of exchange of energy between a clinician or a personal trainer and the person you are working with, right? Like, they're coming to you for much more than just losing weight. They're coming to you to get away from their life for an hour. They're coming to you, you know, a lot of times we end up becoming their therapist, more like their psychological therapist rather than their physical therapist. So, you know, there's power in touch. And so I think that's really something that no matter what discipline you're in, there's always some type of manual therapy, for lack of a better word, that falls within your scope of practice. And so that's kind of my go-to, I guess, when people say, what should I do next?
Well, now one of the biggest, not necessarily trends, but one thing that people have been talking about a lot, we've had Mike Mullen, who's up in Maine. He's come down to NBSC and talked about PRI stuff a lot. Like, I think he's been to our facility three times for maybe a total of like 7 or 8 hours, just talking about the really cool stuff that's going on at Postural Restoration Institute. One of the big things that you talked about in your lecture was the diaphragm. And I haven't talked about this on the show very much. And we have our previous guests, like we had Eric Cressy came on and he talked a little bit about what he's doing with PRI and stuff like that. But break it down. Like why should we worry about the diaphragm?
Yeah. The diaphragm, as you all know, if you know me at all, is my favorite muscle. And I just love it because it is freakish, right? When you look at how high up the dome of the diaphragm goes up, it goes up to like the T4, T5 rib space, right? And then it goes all the way down. The right crest goes to L3, left crest goes to L2. And if you really dissect it out fascially, it actually goes all the way down to the sacrum. So we're looking at a piece of tissue that covers really from, you know, nipple line to pelvis, which we all know is just an incredible area for all of us to work on, whether, you know, we call it core stability or whatever you want to call it. So here's this muscle that spans this entire area. So we have to pay attention to it, you know, and it has two functions. It has a respiratory function, obviously, and it has a stability function. And so when muscles are overtaxed and they can't quite do their jobs for whatever reason, whether they're in a poor position or, have some, you know, fatigue issues going on, whatever it is, you know, it's got to make choices. And your diaphragm will always choose respiration over stability. So then your body's got to figure out, okay, now how am I going to stabilize my back? How am I going to stabilize my trunk? And so we get into a lot of different patterns where, and a lot of different sort of stability training, when really, if we can kind of just reconnect with that diaphragm and figure out how to make it both a stabilizer and a respirator, we really kind of have really made our jobs a lot easier.
I apologize as I take a sip of my green tea and the highway traffic going by my house right now. It's a very busy part of the day. So with all that being said, you know, what can people do? Like if there's just someone who, you know, isn't a trainer, isn't, physical therapist that's listening to the show, is there anything they can do about optimizing their performance with their diaphragm? Like what can they do to make sure that they're not just forgetting about it?
Yeah, I think that, to kind of keep in mind that respiration and breathing are two different things, right? So as you are, our respiration is sort of the exchange of gases because our body cannot store gases. So we're not going to change that, right? Like I don't want people to think like, oh, I'm going to learn how to change my respiratory pattern when I'm running, right? That's not it. It's going to be what it is. Breathing we can use as a therapeutic exercise and to help with either mobility or stability, depending on what we want to do. So one of the things that I'll have people do is to just sort of curl up into a ball, almost like a child's pose, if people know what that is, kind of curl up into a ball real tight and take in some nice deep breaths. And one of two things happens. Either you start to sort of expand the posterior aspect of your thoracolumbar junction and get some mobility of your ribs there to try to get some more excursion for that diaphragm to work through, or you freak out because you can't breathe. So if you freak out because you can't breathe, just lay on your side, get into fetal position, try to do the same thing. So that's one thing. The second thing is just to kind of utilize what we call the expiratory reserve volume to help kick in your oblique muscles to help create stability. So if everyone goes ahead and puts their fingers, you know, kind of right on their obliques, right below their rib cage, and they take in a deep breath as much as possible, and then they blow out the air as much as possible. Keep blowing it out like until it becomes uncomfortable. You want to take a breath so bad, you'll start to feel those obliques kick in. And so we can use getting into that expiratory reserve volume to help with our trunk stability. And so I've really gotten away from teaching people bracing and drawing in and all those different things. I just kind of teach people how to utilize that expiratory reserve volume. It brings their ribs down. It puts their thoracolumbar junction in a more neutral spine. And once they're doing that, they have to maintain that position and breathe. If they're doing that, then their diaphragm's functioning the way it should be.
So not to, get into too in depth into programming or anything like that while we're on here, but like one of the things that we played around with at MBSC is like, all right, we'll just do, you know, try to get in like 5 belly breaths. You know, that's what we'll do as part of our warm up, just because we're in a group setting. Like, it's hard to, you know, give tons of individual attention. So we'll do like what you said, you know, just make sure you take a deep breath in through your belly and then just keep blowing as much as you can until, like you said, it's uncomfortable. So, how do you like to implement that stuff? Is it just like right at the beginning of a training session? Is that the best way for people to implement that?
Yeah, I do. I mean, obviously, the majority of what I do is more individual or very small group as opposed to large group. So from an individual standpoint or a small group, it's very easy to do that. Large group, actually, you know, you just kind of have to be a little bit creative. But same thing, I do it usually in the beginning. I do exactly that. I do, you know, I maybe spend 3 to 5 minutes on it maximum, probably closer to 3 minutes, to just sort of make people aware of it and get people sort of locked into it, and almost sort of introduce it as a 101, for you know, a lack of a better way to put it, like just sort of breathing 101, understanding the position of their back, and then we'll go back to that throughout whatever we're doing the rest of that session. But that's exactly how I do it, is put it in the beginning just for a few minutes and you know, see how it goes.
And this sounds like such a simple thing to do. So I don't want people to, you know, to be listening to this out there and think like, I don't really need to do that. I don't need to breathe like before training. And for me personally, like, I was one of those people when like PRI came in, I'm like, this is, first off, it's going over my head. You guys are using, you know, all these abbreviations. I don't know what you're talking about. Even Mike's confused. So, you know, that's not usually a good sign. But when we are, you know, talking about the breathing stuff, when I started implementing that stuff, I've torn my pec on my right side twice. I've had partial tears, and the same on the left side once. And after that last tear, that partial tear, I was barely able to do push-ups without any kind of discomfort, like, or the worrying, like, oh my God, it's that feeling right before it tore that last time. And just doing something as simple as, you know, doing 3 minutes of breathing before training, before, you know, doing the rest of my warm up, I got able to, I'm not going to barbell bench ever again. I'm not even going to risk it, but being able to dumbbell bench and get pretty close to where I was, you know, before that last tear, as a guy who likes to bench, like, that was, I would have paid thousands of dollars to be able to do that again. Like, I was thinking, you know, what do I need to do? Like, is it, you know, getting some more Graston work or whatever, just to get that scar tissue down? But no, it was actually just spending time doing that breathing. And I don't know if that's what fixed it, but I'm willing to attribute it to that. So this is like when you came out, maybe it was, might have been like 3 years ago now. You talked about the DNS stuff, and that was magic to me when I first saw it too. And this was like the same thing.
Yeah, it's, you know, people really underestimate. That's why I'm such an anatomy nerd, right? Like, when you look at the anatomy of stuff, like, the diaphragm spans are almost our entire torso. Like, it's gigantic for a reason. It attaches to our ribs, our T-spine, our lumbar spine, our pelvis, our internal organs. Like, it attaches to everything for a reason. So it's really important. And I think it's definitely been underestimated in the past. And, you know, if we can get it functioning properly, like you said, I mean, there can be huge changes. It can take people's low back pain away. It can, you know, it's been a really powerful, easy thing to sort of incorporate into my personal practice, for sure.
So how are we missing this? Like, for another thing that you referenced, like, yeah, these are studies that were done, or things that were being done over 100 years ago, you know, things that we keep forgetting, and then we rediscover it in maybe a new way to explain why something is beneficial. Is this something that we've just known forever? Or, like, you know, there's been some subset of the, you know, the world that's known about this, and we're just trying to, now we've just figured out a way to justify it, like, scientifically?
Yeah, I think this stuff has been around forever. I mean, I referenced, you know, papers from 1898, Sherrington in 1906. I mean, this stuff is not new. And I think what just sort of happens sort of in that age of discovery is that people are always trying to discover new things. And I think at this point now, we've sort of discovered everything that there is to kind of discover. I don't want to say that there's not going to be a new concept ever developed, but really everything is going to be rooted in what we've already done and an extension of what we've already done. And so I think people are, instead of trying to discover new things, are kind of looking back at like, okay, how can we just do what we're doing better? What can we? So I think instead of looking forward, people are starting to look back, and looking back actually will get us to move forward. And I think that that is absolutely, absolutely huge. But yeah, I think that, people are just starting to, at least for me in my personal practice, I just was working way too hard, right? I was digging elbows. I was stretching gigantic legs. I'm pushing on joints and, you know, I'm getting old. I've been doing this for 18 years now. I'm getting tired. So, you know, working less hard, is a good thing. And I have found with some of the breathing stuff, with some of the visceral stuff, with some of the needling stuff, I really am not having to work as hard as I used to. And quite frankly, that's a beautiful thing.
I want to stay on the talk that you had to perform better for a little bit, just because I was for people out there that don't know, I was like running a booth during the weekend for MBSC, but I got to, you know, poke my head into a couple talks this time. And, you know, by far, like yours was the one that was like, had me locked in. I wasn't like looking at my phone, like, oh, do I have to leave yet? It was just
awesome,
you know, wall to wall, interesting stuff. And one of the things that you were talking about was your experience at the Boral Institute?
Yep.
Is that how you, okay. Yep. So, talk a little bit about that, because I know you mentioned a particular experience when you took your first course with them.
Yeah, I'll admit, I mean, that first course, it was in December, and I went with one of my closest friends and colleagues, Anna Hartman. And, you know, we're sitting there and I just was not in a place to be like, I don't know, up in the air. I was in the mood for tangible things at the time. And so, you know, at first it kind of was a very sort of, okay, can you feel it? Can you feel the energy? Can you feel it? And I'm thinking, no, I can't feel it. And I can't believe I have to sit here for four more days pretending like I feel it. Like, I'm so annoyed. So that's how the course sort of started for me. And it ended on Sunday with me signing up for course number two in June. So over the course of 4 days, you know, you just started to lock in. And they used a really interesting example, which for those of you who know me know I love my wine and definitely enjoy my time with my wine. And so one of the quotes that Boral had used was, if, you know, a master sommelier can be expected to recognize the region and the type of grape and all of those things with his palate, why shouldn't we expect as clinicians to develop that same type of specificity within our palpation? And I thought, that's a really interesting way to put it, right? Like, these major wine people can, I mean, they can tell by the minerality of the grape, like where it's from or what type of thing it is. So why shouldn't I be able to feel those subtle things with my fingers? And if you just sort of back off, right? Because everything, our soft tissue stuff is taught to press in, press in, press in, go harder, be more aggressive. And then really when you just back off, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, now I can feel that. And so having that different touch and just sort of being open to things gliding, not necessarily the way I want them to, you know, in an inferior, superior direction, whatever, just sort of kind of feeling along with it, you do start to feel it. And when you start to think about all the fascial attachments that go through the organs and attach onto our abdominals, our low back, our thoracic spine, I mean, how can we say that we address fascia peripherally if we're not addressing it centrally as well? And so once I kind of really started to fit it within my concepts of what I believe to be true and important, it fit right in. And I'm definitely going to take a couple more courses with them for sure.
And I think this was in regards to what you were checking out there, but you brought up some studies, and this is again, like one of those things, this is just mind blowing to me. But talking about, obviously, for people out there, I mean, on the show, we've talked a lot about, you know, Thomas Meyer stuff like anatomy trends, like, you know, fascia became a huge thing a couple of years ago. But you were talking about literally how, you know, fascia is all throughout our body and that it's even like holding our organs in place and what it could mean to address the quality of the tissue, like around your kidneys and stuff like that, and the applicability that could have to just, you know, everyday, you know, human beings. Can you talk a little bit about some of that stuff? Just because, again, I was like, what? Now we have to think about the fascia around our organs? I'm just trying to get people to foam roll. Come on.
I know, it's so true. It starts to get really overwhelming. And that's why I talked about this weekend at Perform Better, what I talked about, because it gets so overwhelming and you're like, where does this fit within my programming? Where does it fit within my philosophy? Where does this fit with me getting my baseball player to get back on the mound and, you know, throw a fastball? Like, where does this all fit in? And so, when you start to look at, you know, again, the anatomy of it, the kidneys are surrounded by all this fascia and the fascia's attached to the low back. And so think about how many people have low back issues, right? And of course, our nature is to go biomechanically. That's what we grew up learning about, right? That's the foundation of what we learn. And I think that if we have to choose, we have to lay that foundation. We have to understand our fundamental anatomy, our musculoskeletal system, our biomechanical system, our neuromuscular system. That is the root of our foundation. But just to acknowledge and be aware of that there's other stuff going on, I think in and of itself is really powerful, to just kind of have that mindset of there's way more out there, and it's not like that far gone. It's pretty close to mainstream sort of biomechanical stuff that you're doing. So to just, I think, like I said, just to even be aware of it, that it's there, especially for your clients or your patients who are not getting better, right? Like those 20% of people that just aren't responding to anything you're doing, instead of saying, oh, well, that person's crazy, or they don't want to get better, or lumping them into the chronic pain category, think, all right, what else is there? If I don't know it, how can I find a clinician that does?
So if people are listening to this out there and they're starting to get concerned, they got one more thing, they got a foam roller or something like that. Like, is this something that the general population, is this something we should think about addressing or even, you know, contemplating? Like, how do we start, you know, giving people like lacrosse balls and tennis balls and start getting a little bit more into their low back? Is this something that we should, you know, be thinking about?
You know, it's really not techniques that you can do on yourself. And you definitely need training in order to do it. So it's definitely not something that we want to start jumping into. I think that it would be really cool for people to find a visceral therapist in their region, in their city or wherever, and just get a treatment and kind of see how it feels and see what it is involved with. So then that way, you know, we don't all have to know how to address everything. That's why we create our network. So knowing that, hey, I've got this type of patient. He's responding, but not fantastically. Maybe I can refer him to this person. And really, they only recommend doing visceral work like once every 3 weeks. So it's not like you're adding on, you know, another 3-time-a-week appointment to your client's stuff. So I think it's one of those things where you're aware of it, you refer out to someone who is experienced in it. And if you can, you know, try to go experience it yourself so you can see how it fits within your personal practice.
I think we hit on this a little bit earlier in the show, but again, one of the responses that I got on Twitter and stuff like that was for people asking about, you know, whether it's a PRI course or a DNS course, you know, this stuff does look super interesting to the people that are just getting like a brief glimpse of it. Which of that, you know, things out there do you think should be on everyone's list, just in terms of like an improving movement and performance perspective? Like what should people be, I mean, this stuff isn't cheap. So like if someone has limited funds, you know, what should they be checking out, I guess?
Right. You know, not to have a shameless plug for my systemic dry needling business, but I mean, dry needling has definitely significantly altered the way I practice. It's not in everybody's practice act. It varies state by state for athletic trainers, physical therapists, and chiropractors. So it's not something that everybody can do, but it has significantly altered my practice in a way that I just want to spread the word to those who can, because again, it makes me, I mean, I'm not that great of a manual therapist, and it makes me look like a really great manual therapist. So, that's always really good. So I think if that's in your practice act, that would be something I definitely would encourage people to take. I think it can be a game changer. You know, I mentioned it in my course. One of my favorite all time courses that I've taken is, the fascial stretch therapy stretch to win course from Chris and Ann Frederick. I just loved the course. Chris and Ann are hilarious. So it's just a fun few days. And then B, again, game changer, like the way I stretch people, if I'm going to do something passively, completely changed the way I do that and completely changed my thought process of, you know, sagittal plane, frontal plane, transverse plane stretching. So again, I think that was another game changer for me. That I would encourage people to look into. So those are probably my top two things right now.
Let's talk about dry needling for a little bit, because this is something, you know, we're talking about needles. Some, that can freak some people out. So for people that haven't heard about this, can you talk about what that treatment involves?
Yeah. I mean, it basically utilizes a thin filament needle, and you are basically inserting the needle into the body. And so you're using it to stimulate whether it's myofascial stuff, musculoskeletal stuff, neuromuscular stuff, whatever it may be. There's a ton of biochemical reactions that happen when you insert that needle. And keep in mind, I mean, the needles are very, very thin. I mean, we're talking, you can fit 20 of them into, you know, that of a syringe that you're going to draw blood from. So, I mean, they're really, really tiny. They don't leave a lesion, meaning you do create a lesion, but it's not large enough to create scar tissue. So you just kickstart this whole biochemical process of healing, without leaving behind scar tissue. And so that's why it can be so effective. There's chemical things that happen locally, that happen segmentally, and that happen systemically, that really can alter people's pain and inflammation, not only at the local level, but through the body as a whole. So it's really interesting to use as well from a regenerative standpoint for the athletes, to just kind of help their entire body recover. So there's a lot of different applications for it, and a lot of different types, right? It's like manual therapy. There's tons of different manual therapy classes. There's tons of different dry needling classes. And so each technique is different. They're all effective. So it's just a matter of sort of what fits into your personal practice.
And for people out there that are interested, Sue has a bunch of information on her website at suefalsone.com, SUEFALSONE.com. We'll put that in the show notes too, in case you're in the car, don't pull over for this. We'll just go to the website. Okay. Not done yet, because I have more questions for you.
That's fine.
I want to know, What right now, what's getting you up in the morning? What's getting you excited to learn about? Because, you know, obviously you're very excited about the diaphragm, but I want to know what today are you like going into the PubMed database to get information on? Like, what are you interested in right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. I am diving into all the dry needling stuff and stuff that's out there. I mean, I've read 3 needling books and going on my 4th. So, you know, obviously because of where I sort of am and headed, I'm really diving into that kind of stuff right now. The other thing is, you know, we've already talked about the visceral stuff. I'm really looking to see how that, plays into people's movement patterns and sort of how I can personally use it. So, that's really what I'm sort of diving into. And then, the other stuff that I'm diving into is all, you know, taxes for small businesses and trying to learn about taxes and finances, because I am definitely not a business person. So those are kind of my 3 areas of study right now. And yeah, there's my to read list though is gigantic, and my to be watched pile of DVDs is getting bigger by the minute. So there's a lot of stuff out there, and you just kind of have to hack away at it. One book, one article, one DVD at a time.
Mm-hmm. So that's what I was going to finish up with, is that you are kind of, you're doing your own thing now. So for people out there that want to get some more information on what you're up to, and I know you have some things that are actually coming up. I think you're going back to Chicago, right?
I'm going back to Chicago soon to teach a systemic dry needling class. Really my two websites, SueFalsoni.com and systemicdryneedling.com. I really try to keep updated as far as where I'll be in the world and where I'll be speaking and on what topics and those sorts of things. And just sort of, you know, working with different athletes throughout the country, just one-on-one, which is really nice and really fun. And then just doing some different business consulting too. A lot of people are trying to put physical therapy in their strength and conditioning facilities, and a lot of physical therapists are trying to put cash-based, you know, performance training in their businesses. So just trying to kind of help people navigate that process, because it definitely can be confusing. So just kind of doing a little bit of everything right now.
Very cool. Well, I'm going to let you go for now, because like in 15 minutes, USA is going to be playing some yes. soccer of huge importance right now.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
So what I'm thinking right now is that we're going to let this get out to the audience. And I want to hear some feedback from the listeners out there, and send Sue some feedback too. It's at Sue Falsoni on Twitter. And also, like I said, going to our website, you can get some more information. But I'm hoping, you know, this is like just sparking the imaginations and the, you know, the minds of the people out there for some more stuff to talk about. And I can't believe I went like 300 episodes without asking you to come on, but I'm happy to finally have you on the show. And for people out there, like I said, go check out Sue's stuff. It's super interesting. And at least go check out her blog, some really cool travel stuff on there as well. So if you do need to take a little bit of a break from the industry or from work or whatever you're doing, go check that stuff out. But Sue, thank you so much for taking the time to come on. It's been a huge pleasure to have you.
Oh gosh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on, Kevin. I appreciate it.
All right. So for everyone else out there, I do have a brief interview with Chris Poirier and an interview with Martin Rooney coming up right after this that are like 5 minutes each that I grabbed when I was in Chicago. But that was all I was able to grab. So you can listen to that right now. All right. Now I'm with Chris Poirier, the head of Perform Better and the go-to guy when it comes to getting these great seminars together. And we were talking a little bit before I started recording, but you guys have been doing these for 14 years now, at least the summits.
Yeah, we've been doing education for going on 18 years of doing our one days, and then 14 years ago we decided to put these multi-day summits together where we have multi-rooms, multi-speakers going at one time. And we started our first one in Providence, Rhode Island 14 years ago with 225 people, with only one of them. Now we have three summits between Providence, Chicago, and Long Beach. And this year we're on our record pace. Each year they've been growing ever since. And we just about hit 1,200 for Providence. And we just about hit 800 for Chicago here. And Long Beach is looking like that'll be close to about 900. So
just talking about the genesis of this, Mike's filled me in a little bit. But, how did this all come about? What was the point where you were, thinking, I want to start an educational seminar series?
Well, 18 years ago, we were basically, we had a few consultants, one in particular, Vern Gambetta, who was following the functional path, and he was our big functional play. And that's, we came out and everything we selected to go into the catalog or everything we did was based off of functional training. And we were trying to explain what it was, 19, 20 years ago. And it was a difficult process to explain. It wasn't quite understood and it wasn't as well received. So we wanted these seminars. We created these one-day seminars that would show people what it actually is, what it is not, what it's about. Sort of implementing equipment into the hands-on has always been a big part of how people learn, with both, the educational sit-down lecture to the hands-on doing-it-yourself type of thing. And we found that to be a very successful formula for learning functional training.
And it's amazing, like you were talking about Providence, there would be the hands-on rooms full of 500 people doing stuff at once. It's just an amazing atmosphere for education.
Yeah, it is. It really is. Everyone, the hands-on rooms are always pretty crowded. A lot of people like to do the hands-on, and we get great turnouts in the lectures as well as, you know, I think people are the mix. People learn differently. Some people learn through lecture and listening and writing notes, and other people learn by just doing. So, you know, the nice thing about it is we can offer both of them. They can learn both ways.
And obviously the other end, Perform Better and PerformBetter.com, you guys are, kind of the go-to equipment resource for people out there, whether it's not just functional training, but, you know, just for people building strength and conditioning facilities in general. I don't know if you could talk a little bit about just, you know, how Perform Better started. Like, how did that start out? Like, when did you get that idea of just, like, wanting to get into the equipment industry?
Okay, well, that's how we initially came about 22 years ago was was selling equipment.
Yep.
And we were a small 20-page catalog 22 years ago, and we had very limited items. And, you know, as we grew and we searched every year for new products, and we'd always try to increase our supply of what we carried, and always looking for new products. And we've grown into a 100-page catalog with over 4,000 SKUs of different products online that we sell. And, it's really, a lot of people think of us as a seminar company, but we are first and foremost an equipment company. About 10 years ago, we started to do some facility design. So we were doing two-dimensional, trying to be the one-stop shop, and that has grown significantly for us, too. We've just invested into a new 3D CAD drawing system, which actually is, we've had 3D for about 5 years now. We just got the latest technology, which makes everything look realistic. So we can show somebody what their facility is going to look like before they get in it, which is a big help, especially in three dimension.
Yeah, it's been cool to see some of the facilities that you guys have designed for MBSC Thrive, you know, and being able to, like, virtually kind of walk through the facility and take a look at how it's going to be laid out is really fascinating. So do you guys offer this as a service on the website that people can check out?
We do. We have a design on there where people can go see what we did, what we designed, and there's just a little Q&A formula inside there that they can fill out, and one of our reps will be in touch with them within the next 24 hours and sort of helping them out and sort of laying out, getting some ideas and laying out what someone's looking for.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Chris. Again, performbetter.com for equipment, and also to check out the fantastic seminar series scheduling up there as well. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you very much. Glad to be on.
Okay, we are here with Martin Rooney. We're in Chicago for the Perform Better Summit. So first off, Martin, I feel like we were just here 2 weeks ago, and we were. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Yeah, we were just in Providence, Rhode Island. We had 1,300 people, the largest attendance ever. Mm-hmm. And, man, the energy was off the charts. But already here, bright and early in Chicago, it seems almost like there's the same amount of people. And these people are fired up.
Yeah, it's great. The Chicago usually has the lower attendance of the three, but this year they're definitely bringing it. So for people, you know, one of the things I want to do with this podcast for this episode is to allow people who could not make it to Chicago or to the Perform Better seminars this year get a little taste of what's going on. So, for you, first off, what are you going to be talking about this weekend?
Well, my topic, Kevin, is the art of small group training, which is kind of, I don't know if you can call it an oxymoron, like jumbo shrimp or whatever, but you know, when my hands-on will probably have 300 or 400 people in it, which is not exactly a small group. But as I had to formulate these topics, and what people may not know is you have to almost formulate your topic a year in advance. So, and it really morphed as I was developing it, where the art that I really went after on this one is really how to coach a group like that. So not really, hey, here's all the exercises you could use, or here's the equipment or the formations, but really about coaching to create a real energetic experience, which is what, you know, I'm kind of renowned for, and my Training for Warrior system, that's what we're trying to produce. So my lecture is going to be about that, and my hands-on is going to show that off.
Well, just talking about your hands-on, I was there in Providence, obviously, and it was like more like 500 people in your hands-on, so it gets pretty crazy. How do you handle that? Obviously, you have people helping out, and there's just like, you know, lots of people just helping each other coach.
Yeah, the biggest challenge, or what I would say, actually what it taught me, and where I'm always good, and you know this about me too, is it's about preparation. So what people didn't see behind the scenes is, hey, I got here yesterday already. I don't do my event till tomorrow, but I'm already scoping out the room. room? What equipment do I have available? How much do I have? I'm trying to make an estimate of how many people I'm going to have, because it all comes back. And maybe this is the big secret, is it comes back to the experience. Like, I want the people that come here to get a great experience. And if I just walk into the room and I don't know what I have available, and I don't really have a plan, that's not going to happen. And hey, regardless if you've got 500 people in the room or you got five in your session, that was one of my secrets that I talk about in the lectures. I always planned ahead. I was always prepped. I knew what I was going to say. I really had stuff ready for these people so that they showed that I went the extra mile and that I really cared. And you know, hey, I started like everybody else. I was training kids and housewives at 6 a.m. till 10 p.m. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting about what I think my lecture really is, hey, but what are the 7 or 8 things that I did that nobody else did that now has allowed me to have this incredible honor to come and present for everybody?
So obviously you're going to be doing a lecture and then you're going to be doing a hands-on. But again, you know, just to give people a little bit of a taste, you know, what are some take-home points from your talk or from your hands-on for people out there listening?
Well, I think, you know, one of the main things that I talk about right off the bat is I say that I think sometimes as trainers, coaches, therapists, we're aiming at the wrong things. Like, I think we've forgotten that it's really, like I just talked about, it's about that experience or it's about that client. And I know we say that, we give it lip service, but a lot of times it's, hey, it's how the trainer's day's going and this person's driving them nuts or this isn't fair or they're not on time, as if the person coming is there to serve them, mm-hmm. instead of, hey, us remembering that this is a service job and we're there to serve those people. And that really is that's the outline or the overview of my presentation. And then what I do is I go into more details of like how to best serve people. Mm-hmm. So you get this, not only the results that the people want, but because of those results, that's how you grow your career. And like I said, I think people are forgetting about that sometimes, that we think we need more knowledge or we need some new secret piece of information or supplement, and that'll be the key, versus, man, if you just really deliver an experience that people are blown away on, then ultimately you're going to succeed. And that was always my secret. I would say I'm not the most knowledgeable guy, and I also don't hand out supplements or other things or try to look for the newest piece of equipment. But what I will say is I'm trying to create an experience that people will never forget. And that's my goal for this weekend.
I think that's one of the things that we've been seeing so far, is that, you know, people, we have the programming thing down, but, you know, what I love about your stuff is it's about, you know, the interaction with the client or the athlete, you know, kind of bringing them something that, you know, other coaches are not bringing, whether it's, you know, energy level or, you know, the attention that they kind of deserve. So it's great to kind of see that. So other than that, you know, obviously you're traveling all the time. You're working on so many cool things for Training for Warriors and stuff like that. What else have you been doing? Like, what's been like keeping you up at night? What are the things that you've been thinking about when it comes to, like, yeah, this is going to be the next thing that I think we're going to have to bring to the, whether it's Training for Warriors or whatever?
Well, it's funny you say that, because last night I was up till about 1 a.m. doing it. But, you know, because one of the things that I'm designing in our system now, we're coming up on 200 facilities that are officially running the program.
Awesome,
in 30 countries. We just signed up Vietnam, Malaysia. I just did a tour through Australia, and we got a bunch of people there now, you know, bought into the system. So my role ultimately as the leader of the organization, and I accept that responsibility with, you know, I take it really serious. You know, it's developing the monthly workouts. It's developing the stories that everybody gets, the stuff that can create that experience. And that's where I'm really spending most of my time. And it's what led to this speech this year too. Mm-hmm. And it's funny that this speech, just by giving it in Rhode Island, I've already had so many invitations to give it at other things. So I know it's resonating with people. And really that's at the heart of Training for Warriors, where, hey, there's a lot of systems. Hey, training is out there. Everybody has that, but it's kind of the way that it's put together, what people become part of. And that's what I'm really focused on, is how to create community that then people really get results. It's not easy. That's for sure. But that's the stuff that's got me super excited and where I'm spending my time.
Well, it's always great to see you and to talk to you. And we're going to be talking again soon in more extended format at some point.
Absolutely.
But it's great to connect right now just in Chicago. And we'll get back to the seminar. We got to get some education on.
Hey, my pleasure. And hey, everybody, keep listening to this stuff. Kevin is a bulldog, making sure that he's bringing great information to you. So, you know, hey, and I hopefully this was valuable to everybody too. And I'm looking forward to seeing somebody at an event.
All right. Thank you, Martin.